Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests on. In the first half, we have Chris Killam. He's an ethnobotanist, and we're going to be talking about ashwagandha. And in the second half, we have Dr. Chris Ferguson, and he's going to talk about the gaming effects on mental health. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Many flies and flying insects in hospitals carry bacteria that could pose an infection risk to patients, and more than half of them carry the type that resist antibiotics, a new study says. British researchers used ultraviolet light fly traps, electronic fly killers, and sticky traps to collect nearly 20,000 flies, aphids, ants, wasps, bees, and moths at 7 hospitals in England over 18 months, and found that almost 9 in 10 insects had potentially harmful bacteria on or in their bodies. In some cases, the level of bacteria carried by insects was enough to potentially cause infection in humans. The study also found that 53% of the bacterial strains on the insects were resistant to at least one class of antibiotics, so-called superbugs. Of those, 19% were resistant to multiple antibiotics. The findings were published June 21st in the Journal of Medical Entomology. For pregnant women, good nutrition is essential for their health and the baby's health, but many aren't getting adequate amounts of the vitamins and minerals they need, a new study finds. On the other hand, some are actually taking higher levels of nutrients than is healthy, the same research reports, and almost all are eating too much salt. Lead researcher Reagan Bailey said many pregnant women do not consume enough of key nutrients, specifically iron, potassium, calcium, magnesium, zinc, and vitamins A, C, D, E, K, B6, folate, and choline, even with the use of dietary supplements. She's an associate professor of nutrition science at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. The report was published online June 21st in the journal JAMA Network Open. Researchers have found more evidence of a puzzling phenomenon. Older adults who survive cancer seem to be somewhat protected against dementia. A number of studies in recent years have found that cancer survivors have a relatively lower risk of developing Alzheimer's. The new research adds another layer. It shows that even before their diagnosis, older adults who go on to develop cancer have an edge when it comes to memory performance. Among the older Americans who were tracked for 16 years, those who developed cancer typically had sharper memory skills, both before and after the diagnosis, than those who remained cancer-free. Researchers said it all supports the theory that some of the biological processes that contribute to cancer may actually protect against dementia. The study was published online June 21st in JAMA Network Open. Being first at the office and the last to leave may help you get that promotion, but new research warns that working long hours may not be good for your heart, and the longer you do it, the higher your risk for a stroke, French researchers said. The findings come from a review of self-reported work habits and heart health among roughly 144,000 French men and women between the ages of 18 and 69. Those who worked long hours had a 29% greater risk of stroke, and those who worked long hours for at least 10 years had a 45% greater risk of stroke, the analysis found. For the purpose of the study, long work hours meant working more than 10 hours a day for at least 50 days out of the year. The findings were reported in the July issue of the journal Stroke.
We haven't had a call in yet from Chris Killam, so we are going to go to a Mindful Guide to Authenticity with Aura Nadrich. How do we get over these kind of thoughts?
Hi, thank you for having me. Well, first of all, we need to acknowledge that we are having these types of thoughts. You know, we think between 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day, and quite a few of them are negative and don't serve our well-being. So with the Says Who method, it gives you the opportunity to look at those thoughts closely so that you can question them and then begin to change them.
So first step one is really listening to what's going on in your mind?
Yes, you know, we are very busy people, as we know, and we oftentimes don't really pay attention to what our thoughts are telling us. We'd rather ignore them or push them aside or basically even sometimes just ignore them or pretend we're not even having them. And, you know, the positive aspect of negative and fear-based thoughts is that they're trying to get our attention. They want us to pay attention to them. They want us to do something about it so that they don't cause us unhappiness and, you know, disharmony. And as some theories have today, that thoughts can create disease. So our thoughts are trying to tell us something, and we want to pay attention to them so that we can do something, what I propose in my book, The Release and Replace Technique, which is learn how to replace those negative and fear-based thoughts with their positive counterpart.
Okay, so the big idea here, the work-related stress that's reaching epidemic rates, there is a way out of that to hone in and listen to your own mind and retrain it.
Absolutely, and that's a really good point, because you don't want to get to the point where your concerns, your worries, your anxiety, and or even sadness, which can turn into depression, which I believe are all thought-based, in that you can begin to look at a thought, to pay attention to it, to understand that it's causing you anxiety or stress and suffering, and that you can begin to change them. You can begin to, like I said, not only acknowledge them, which is the number one, you know, beginning point, is to acknowledge that, hey, that thought that I'm having is really upsetting and unsettling for me. I don't have to be at the effect of it. I can actually look at it closely, go a little bit deeper to see why I have that thought of concern or why I have that thought of, you know, anxiety, and that I can change it so it doesn't feel like it's controlling me and creating anxiety to the point where it renders you not even wanting to do anything.
Okay, Aura, like we have, out of a faucet, we have a full range of emotions that come out. Are they all valuable?
You know, we do have a full range of thoughts. And thoughts, as I say in my book, thoughts create feelings, emotions, create behavior, create actions, create reality. You want to connect the dots. So yes, our thoughts, as you know, you said, we have a variety of them. We do. We have the garden variety of thoughts. Everybody's got positive thoughts, and everybody's got negative thoughts, and everybody's got the inner critic. So by working with those negative thoughts or those inner critical thoughts that we have, again, by understanding that they can be changed, not to have a fixed idea about our thoughts. And first and foremost, that you want to be willing to change the thoughts that are causing you unhappiness and suffering and are ultimately not serving your well-being.
And how do we start?
Well, I have the Sesu method, and it's a very straightforward, what I like to call a user-friendly questioning method, so that if or when a negative thought comes up, A, you do what I suggest in the very beginning, and that's to acknowledge it. To acknowledge that you have a negative thought that is not very supportive, that isn't positive, and you can actually stop if or when it comes up, which is, I say, catch it just while it's percolating. You know, get that moment. You know, be present with the first thought that says, oh, I'm such a loser, or oh, I'm never going to finish this because I don't complete anything, or I'm never going to meet my soulmate, or nobody loves me. You know, all the different things that we tell ourselves. The second that thought comes up, to acknowledge it, I'm having this thought that's, you know, negative, and I want to work with it. So what do? I acknowledge it, and by acknowledging it, you can be more of the observer of it rather than to immediately react to a thought, and it triggers you to the point where you become so reactive, you can't even work with it. Once you become the observer, and then, as I said, acknowledge the thought, you can then begin to ask yourself the 7 questions of the method so that you can begin to find out if that thought is even real or not, or if it serves your well-being or doesn't.
Aura, can you take us through those 7 questions?
I absolutely can. So the first thought, says who, is the title of the book. Says who is a very important question to ask ourselves, the very first question. Says who? You know, when that thought comes up in your mind that, you know, as I said, whether it's I'm not good enough, I'm unlovable, I'm ugly, I'm fat, you know, we tell ourselves a lot of things. The very first thing you want to do is say, says who? Who is saying this thought in my mind? Who is telling me that I'm unlovable, that I'm unworthy, that I'm never going to amount to anything, that I'm not good at anything that I do? Who is saying this thought in my mind? And it's very important to do what I also say in Says Who, to own our thoughts. And when you ask yourself, says who is saying this thought in my mind, it's very honest to say, I am. I am telling myself I'm unlovable. I am telling myself I'm not worthy. I am telling myself that nobody's going to find me attractive. And that's a brave moment to face of oneself, to be able to really look ourselves in the face and say, I am telling myself these very negative and fearful and hurtful mean things that I say to myself. By doing that, you begin the process to go on to then ask yourself the following question: have I heard someone say this thought before? So many of our negative and fear-based thoughts did not even originate with us. We perhaps heard them in childhood. It may have been told to us by an authority figure. It may have been said to us by a bully on the schoolyard or a family member. Something is said to us early on in our lives before we didn't think we were okay. And it is said to us, and that is the first moment where we believe something about us that isn't true. And so many people carry those beliefs into adulthood. So it's very important to find out, have I heard someone say this before? You might remember by asking yourself that question the very first time you heard someone say something to you that was negative and actually really hurtful. Third question, do I like this thought? One of my personal favorites. What's likable about our negative thoughts? Is there something you like about the negative thought that you tell yourself? Do you know? I mean, there's logic to these questions. You know, so many of the things that we tell ourselves that are negative aren't very likable, do you know, unless you like telling yourself negative and hurtful things. Fourth question, does this thought make me feel better? Similar, you know, logic prevails. What is it about your negative thought that makes you feel better? Does it make you feel inspired? Does it make you feel productive? Does it make you feel that you can get something done? Do you know? People are really hard put to answer these questions as far as what is it about a negative thought that you like, or what is it about a negative thought that you feel actually makes you feel better, unless you're attached to feeling pretty bad, which I think negative thoughts really make us feel ultimately. Fifth question, does this thought work for me? Again, what is it about your negative thought that's working for you? Positively, favorably, do you know? It's important to really be able to be honest with ourselves when we ask ourselves these questions. Sixth question, am I in control of this thought? So often we feel taken over by our mind, and we feel being taken over by it, especially when it's berating us and haranguing us and undermining us and sabotaging us. We feel as though our mind has power over us, and that couldn't be further from the truth. We allow our thoughts to have power over us. It's a choice that we have. And even though it may feel that way, we have a say in the matter. And the whole goal of this is to change the thoughts that we feel have power over us. Seventh, final question, do I want to keep this thought or let it go? Well, after you've asked yourself all of the said two questions and realized that perhaps the thought that you carry around till today that isn't making you happy, didn't originate with you, you don't like it, it doesn't make you feel better, it doesn't work for you, you don't feel like you have control over it, but rather it has control over you, that when you get to the seventh question, do I want to keep this thought or let it go, you are ready to let this negative thought go.
That's fantastic, Aura. So it sounds to me like we're the only ones really holding ourselves back.
We are. You know, it's like if you think of yourself as you hold the key, you're the gatekeeper. I mean, if you ask yourself, who's really holding you back? Is someone holding you back? You know, that's a good thing to ask says who to. You know, says who? You know, why would I let someone else hold me back? Well, the truth is we are really the ones that make that decision. We can feel like something's holding us back, but we really are, as I say in Says Who, you are the creator and master of your internal dialogue, which creates your reality.
That is fascinating. We're going to have to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about A Mindful Guide to Authenticity.